We're talking about efforts to help tribal communities in Wisconsin sell the food they harvest at a local retail level, and then what that means to an area's economy when that happens. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. The Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission is developing tribal food codes to expand the use of fish, game, and plants harvested in tribal communities. And the commission represents 11 Ojibwe tribes in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan. Tribal members, we want to hear from you. Do you harvest or hunt traditional native foods? Do you sell or donate those foods? Where do they go? Do you sell them wholesale? What would you be able to sell to local grocers or other retail stores? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Philomena Quebec is a policy analyst and attorney at the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. Philomena, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much.
So I understand the commission is helping tribal members to sell traditional agricultural products in their own communities closer to home. So where do things stand now, and what are some of those challenges?
Sure. So currently, there's quite a few tribal members in two of our communities, about three of our communities, that currently harvest fish for commercial sale. And so, and this has been a thing that they've been doing for centuries. So Red Cliff and Bay Mills and some Bad River members, have regular commercial fishing operations, and they're selling their fish at wholesale to the wholesalers who are non-native. The idea would be to provide opportunities for these commercial fishermen and women to have a value-added product, mm-hmm. where they have a production that they're filleting fish and packing fish and selling fish at a retail level, so they can have more income from the tree harvesting that they're doing.
So how difficult is it to get that fish from the water harvested and then to people in the community? What are some of those barriers to go from start to finish?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So there's quite a bit of law and regulation and infrastructure that goes into each step of the processing. And so if a fisherman or woman is simply gutting fish on their fishing boat, there's no real codes or law that they need to follow, just a plan to make sure everything is safe and sanitary. But if they're taking the fish off and actually engaging any filleting or packing or smoking or anything like that, it requires quite a bit more investment. And so part of it is on a tribal government level, having law in place regarding food safety standards.
And these would be the food codes?
And that's what we're working on. Yeah, that's the part that we're working on. And then there's also a system for inspecting, and that would be another thing that the tribal government would work on. And then the final piece would be facilities. And so that would be probably either the tribal government or the business owner having some sort of food processing plant. And so those are kind of three different pieces that need to go together in order to allow a business owner, who makes food, to be able to sell at a retail level.
We're talking with Philomena Quebec. She's a policy analyst and attorney at the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. Your thoughts here as well, 800-642-1234. Are you native? And are you or your children on federal food assistance program? What have you noticed about the foods included in the program? Are there foods you grew up eating, traditional native foods, do you wish they were more around you, more offerings in your local grocery store? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Philomena, once the commission has come up with these tribal food codes, these food safety standards, what are the next steps?
Sure. So, you know, this would be a model code, and model codes really are, it's a tool that a tribal community or a state or anybody could, you know, any kind of government could adopt. And once they adopt these codes, then they can start using them. But we're making them available to the tribes to adopt partial or wholesale, or be able to change them if they want to. The commission, we're not a tribal government. We're sort of a division of our 11 tribes, and so it's really the tribal councils that would make the decision regarding, you know, how these model codes are implemented.
So help us connect the dots here. How does this play into the issue of traditional native foods being accessible in, say, federal nutrition programs, like the Food Distribution on Indian Reservations program, for instance, or Head Start, for that matter?
Sure. So right now, there's a provision from the 2013 Farm Bill that provides for the donation of traditionally harvested foods. That's a really good first step for getting more traditional foods into these programs. Currently, it's not applying to the Food Distribution on Indian Reservations program, the FDIPR program.
Mm-hmm.
But it does apply to Head Starts and elderly feeding programs in schools. This program, like our GLIFWIC initiative, is to take this donation program just one step forward and provide opportunities for tribal members not just to donate food, but to sell food to these programs. You know, currently what's missing from being able to sell these foods is food safety standards and food safety standards that have been incorporated into some kind of law. So this initiative is about we've been looking at toxicology of native foods and different risks that are associated with these foods in order to develop standards to address those risks and ensure that what would be sold is a safe, wholesome product, you know, that's standardized, because that's really what we all expect with our modern food system.
Philomena, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Philomena Quebec is a policy analyst and attorney at the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission. We've been talking about how to keep the food that's harvested by tribal communities more local with new food safety standards, food codes, and making them accessible to the immediate area to boost the local economy. Coming up, we look at financial support to farmers and what they can expect from the USDA to ease the impact of tariffs. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at Wisconsin's share of tariff aid payments. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Trump administration last week, it unveiled details of a $16 billion aid package to help farmers hurt by the president's trade war with China. Farmers have been some of the biggest casualties of this trade fight, and these subsidies come as American negotiators are in Beijing this week for trade talks, which collapsed in May after President Trump accused China of reneging on a trade deal. And this is the second round of aid to farmers. They received subsidies last year to help cushion the fallout from trade disputes. So how were your crops affected by tariffs? Do you feel like the rate you'll receive for your crop is enough? Does this tariff relief program do enough for your situation? We're at 800-642-1234. Hope Kerwin is WPR's reporter in La Crosse, and she comes to us from our studios there. Hope, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So before we look at the compensation and what farms will be getting, tell us about how this tariff relief program works under the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Yeah, so the Market Facilitation Program was introduced at the end of last summer to help offset the impacts of increased tariffs from countries like China, Canada, Mexico on U.S. agricultural products.
And so what is it intended to do? Is it to replace the margins of basically that the farmers are not getting? What is that money designed to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's just really to kind of help offset the impact. So when these products see increased tariffs put on them, these are import taxes, you know, they're likely to take a hit on the demand for those products overseas. So they're not selling as much. And so this is just meant to kind of help offset that burden.
And that's where they came up with this total aid amount. What is the USDA handing out here to farmers?
So for 2019, the USDA has up to $14.5 billion authorized for the Market Facilitation Program. That's the direct payments to farmers. You know, they've also introduced some other types of programs like food purchasing for you know, food pantries and other food assistance programs and trade promotion. But this year, this $14.5 billion is directly for these direct payments.
Do farmers have to sign up for this program? How do they get these dollars?
Yeah, so farmers do have to sign up for the program, and they do that through their county farm service agency or FSA office. And so sign up has actually already started for this program now that they've released the details of you know, how they're doing the program this year. And it'll run through December 6th. And this year is slightly different when it comes to signing up. Last year, when they introduced the Market Facilitation Program, they had a per bushel or a per pound rate for most crops, and that was how farmers calculated what their payment would be on their actual yields, on their actual production. But this year, the USDA said that they didn't want to try to influence planting decisions for farmers this spring when they announced that they would be coming back with more payments. And so they are going to be doing these payments for non-specialty crops, for crops like corn and soybeans, on a per acre basis.
And so when you look at that per acre, Wisconsin farmers will receive an average of $39 per acre on this year's crop. What counties had the highest payout rates?
Yeah, so we saw a spread of between, you know, nationally a spread of $15 to $150. In Wisconsin, that spread was between $15, and the highest was Milwaukee County at $59. Also up there was Kenosha and Racine and Rock counties at $58. And then in the bottom five, we saw Ashland, Bayfield, Iron counties all at $15, which was the lowest that payment across the country. And Florence and Price were just above that, Florence at $17 and Price at $18.
So why do we see such disparity between compensation amounts?
So we don't actually know how USDA came to this final number. You know, they said that the per county rate was going to depend on the impact of tariffs in that county. When I talked to Paul Mitchell, who's the director of UW-Madison's Rank Agribusiness Institute, you know, he said that we have an idea that it is taking a look at, you know, for each commodity that falls under this non-specialty category, which is almost 30 different crops, that they're looking at the county's average yield for that crop times a price impact, a number that, again, we don't really know how they came to that number, and then kind of adding all that up for each crop that is grown in that county that falls under this non-specialty category.
I was very surprised to see Milwaukee County at the top, and I'm not really sure why, which crop it was that had a high yield and a high price impact.
So he even expressed some surprise there about what these payouts look like.
Yeah, so I mean that's a big question that a lot of people in the ag industry are kind of puzzling over is kind of how they came to these numbers. We know in 2018 the market facilitation program definitely helped soybean growers the most, or one of the top crops was receiving payments through the market facilitation program, and that was simply because soybeans were definitely impacted when China placed increased tariffs on that commodity.
Talking with Hope Kerwin, she's WPR's reporter in La Crosse, and we're looking at tariff payouts in Wisconsin as part of an aid package. It's called the Market Facilitation Program. You can join in 800-642-1234. Do you plan on applying for aid from the USDA? How are your crops affected by tariffs? Do you feel like the rate you'll receive for your crop is enough? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. So what types of crops will receive the largest payments, Hope, like cranberries and ginseng growers? What will they be getting?
Yeah, so if you actually look at the specialty crops, Paul Mitchell from UW-Madison, he said that those commodities are likely to receive some pretty large payments. So cranberries, they actually will be receiving payments on their production history, unlike the non-specialty crops like corn and soybeans, which is just on a per planted acre basis. So when you looked at cranberries, they're going to be getting 3 cents per pound up to 21,000 pounds roughly per acre. Paul Mitchell, when he was looking over this, he said that's almost 9% more than what farmers are usually get.
Wow.
On dollars per acre basis. So, that should likely be really helpful for some cranberry growers. When it comes to ginseng, they're going to be getting $2.85 per pound at 2,000 pounds per acre. And so, again, that's definitely going to be helpful for ginseng growers, which have definitely been impacted by this trade war with China.
What about dairy farmers? What is it like there for compensation?
So dairy farmers are going to be getting 20 cents per hundredweight or 100 pounds of milk and on their actual production history, again, looking at what their actual production is. When Paul Mitchell kind of did the math on this, looking at kind of what the average production per year per cow, he said that should roughly come out to be about $50 per cow on whatever size dairy that farmer is running. So, that should likely be helpful for some dairy farmers. Dairy farmers last year were one of the groups that really felt like they didn't receive a lot of help in the 2018 market facilitation program. So this should likely be a kind of an increase over last year's.
When you look out to payments around the country, Wisconsin's rates are lower than farmers growing rice, cotton, and peanuts in the South. So how do the rates differ around the country, and why are they higher for Southern farmers?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, we're seeing a spread of $15 per acre in some counties to $150 per acre. And that's where in southern states, that's where you're seeing those $150 per acre payments. Cotton and rice were definitely hit by the tariffs and have been impacted. They're also have a little bit more costly inputs, and that could definitely play a factor into that. Paul Mitchell also told me that you know, those programs tend to do, or those commodities tend to do well when it comes to federal programs under the USDA. And, you know, he said it might have something to do with the fact that, you know, federal lawmakers from those states are able to lobby well for their farmers.
Is it possible that farmers may end up receiving less than the full amount that they're supposed to be given?
Yes. So the USDA has said that they're not going to issue the full payment at once. And they're actually going to be breaking it up into up to three portions. And they'll only continue to pay out this program if markets don't improve. So if we saw, you know, these negotiations go well in China and all of a sudden these tariffs come off and markets improve, you know, they could actually not end up paying out the full $14.5 billion that has been authorized.
And very quickly, when can farmers expect to get their first payments?
The first payment is expected in mid to late August, and that'll be either 50% of what their payment was calculated to be, or it'll be $15 per acre, whichever is the higher amount.
Hope, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Hope Kerwin is WPR's reporter in La Crosse, and we've been talking about the USDA's tariff relief program. Coming up next, it's news, and we'll look at how farmers are trying to attract tourists to keep their farms viable. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the impact of agritourism in Wisconsin. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to Cornell University, agritourism allows farmers to capture the dollars we spend on food, as well as some of the money we spend on entertainment and recreation each year. And the U.S. Census of Agriculture shows an increasing trend in agritourism. There are more than 33,000 agritourism operations in our country, and that is the latest data available from 2012. Are you a farmer who's thinking about diversifying to help keep your farm's balance sheet stable? Have you thought about starting an agritourism business? Where are you at in the process? And if you run a business on your farm, how is it going? What do you offer? Share your stories. 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. Sheila Everhart is president of the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. Sheila, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
And Karen Kelly is a dairy farmer at the Kelly Family Farm and owner and operator of Kelly Country Creamery in Fond du Lac. Karen, welcome to you.
Thank you. Welcome.
So, Sheila, let's start with you. Wisconsin farmers have been seeing low commodity prices for years. Keeping farms profitable is a big struggle, and one of the ways farmers are doing this is by opening their farms up to tourists. So how common is this in Wisconsin?
Well, let me start by giving you some agricultural facts about Wisconsin farming. First of all, in Wisconsin, we have about 64,800 farms. But what is happening since January of 2019, Wisconsin has lost 449 family farms. And so, you know, commodity prices are down. Many of our rural economies have not recovered since 2008 recession. And, you know, the family farmer receives 14.8% of all food sales at the grocery store. So if you go to the grocery store today and spend $100, that family farmer gets $14.80. Now, in 2080, they were receiving 31 cents for every dollar spent. So you can see that is a substantial amount of non-income for the family farm. So in Wisconsin, many farmers are looking at what are their assets and resources, and it's land and the beautiful countryside, and how can we take these assets and generate a revenue stream. So So agricultural tourism combines with agriculture, and agricultural brings $88.3 billion to our economy, and tourism generates $20.3 billion to the Wisconsin economy. So agricultural tourism is growing in popularity because it allows our family farms to diversify what they offer and increase their revenue streams. And agricultural tourism is four elements. It is the combination of tourism and agriculture, and it attracts the public or guests to visit agricultural farms and family farms and operations. It's designed to generate a little extra income to allow family farms to keep their family farms and pay their mortgages, and it provides recreation, entertainment, or education to our visitors.
Well, case in point with Karen Kelly, can you tell us a bit about your farm and how old is it and what do you produce?
Well, the Kelly Family Farm was started 158 years ago. My husband and I are the fifth generation, and our son will be taking over for the sixth generation. It's been a dairy farm, milking Holstein cows and some Jersey crosses. And we have diversified 10 years ago and started an ice cream shop on our dairy farm called Kelly Country Creamery. The business has worked out well for us. Before we started the business, though, we did 4 years of research and development in order to get the business off the ground. In this fall, we are also going to be adding another aspect of agritourism to the farm, which will be called Kelly's Farmstead, and it'll be a fall festival-type event with a corn maze and wagon rides to pick pumpkins and things like that.
Do you think that this investment, and you know, this is risk for you as well. It's not just trying to find a creative thing to do on your farm. You've had to make some sizable investments to be able to do this agritourism.
Yes, you definitely have to. Although being a dairy farmer, you are at risk every single day because you're always at the mercy of the weather. But doing what we did, starting an ice cream shop on a dairy farm in the middle of nowhere, which is our tagline, best ice cream in the middle of nowhere, was
at least you're transparent.
Yes, was a very big risk. And it was something that very much concerned me when we started, because I said to my husband, you're going to risk everything that your family worked so hard for over 150 years for me to start this crazy ice cream dream. And we don't even know if it's going to work. Mm. I said, so that's huge. That's really huge.
Sheila, what are tourists getting out of these agritourism ventures and experiences?
Well, first of all, research shows that we are about five generations removed from the family farm, with most of our residents living in suburbs or metropolitan areas. Children and adults do not know where their food or fiber comes from. So they like to be able to unplug, because in a lot of the agricultural tourism areas, cell phone services are very limited. So you really need to be able to unplug, enjoy the outdoors, spend time with family, and communicate face-to-face. But actually learning where our food, fiber, and fuel comes from, and just getting out, run, jump, play, smell, taste the great produce that our farmers produce. Now, I wanted to just interject a minute, Kate. Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin, has really assisted agricultural tourism businesses in that 2013 Wisconsin Act 269 is Wisconsin's limited liability law for agricultural tourism businesses that protects the business from liability in case anyone was injured or hurt on their property. Mm-hmm. And on our website, Wisconsin Ag Tourism Association website, there is an example of the notice that needs to be posted at the entrances of agricultural tourism businesses and a description of what the law is and how it protects agricultural tourism enterprises.
Well, certainly having the right insurance and the enough insurance with these agritourism businesses is really important. Is that right, Sheila?
That's absolutely correct. And you, as Karen mentioned, many of our Wisconsin farms are centennial farms and have been in families for years. And you want to make sure before you invite guests to your farm that they will have a safe experience and that you as ag tourism operator are protected through your insurance.
We're talking with Sheila Everhart. She's president of the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. And Karen Kelly, a dairy farmer at the Kelly Family Farm and owner and operator of Kelly Country Creamery in Fond du Lac. You can join in 800-642-1234. Are you a farmer who is thinking about diversifying to stay viable? What questions do you want to ask about how to make agritourism happen on your farm? Have you been to a farm to experience some type of perhaps pizza or hayride, maybe a corn maze? What was that like? And why do you want to have that experience? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Karen, when you were going through those 4 years of research and preparing to get ready to launch your agritourism business, your creamery, what was that decision like to go that direction? Was the farm hurting?
The farm was not hurting at that time. We were just looking at different avenues of how to expand the farm, and we're surrounded by three very much larger farms than ourselves, and land does come at a premium. So we were going to try a different route by looking at value-added products, which is taking a product that you do produce and changing it into something else. And then I went to a lot of different conferences. But a big thing is, as I visit a lot of farmsteads across the country that were already doing things on their farms and other businesses that maybe did sell ice cream or something like that, so I could get a better vision of what was out there and what consumers were looking for.
Did you have to learn a lot about making ice cream? I mean, that's not an easy process.
No, it isn't. I decided to take a course that I had learned about at UW-Madison. It was a short course on ice cream making, which was a wonderful course, and I thought there'd be so many people from Wisconsin, but there was only one person, and the people come from all over the United States to take the course. So that was a great way to start building my network of people to help me when I did start the business. I also took another course there of starting with raw milk and formulating my own mix for my ice cream, and then working forward with that. And then also at the University of Florida at Gainesville, they had a course on how to run a successful ice cream business, which I think is offered in Wisconsin at times also. And that was very beneficial too.
We're talking about agritourism in our state and where you visitors may pick berries, eat ice cream, go for a hayride, sample homemade products, see animals, learn how farms operate. We're with Karen Kelly. She owns and operates Kelly Country Creamery in Fond du Lac. Sheila Everhart is president of the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. Your thoughts on agritourism, 800-642-1234. Have you been to a farm to have an experience of some kind? What was that like, and why do you want to have that experience? Would you go back? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're checking in on the agritourism economy here in Wisconsin. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So we're at the crossroads of tourism and agriculture, looking at how farms are trying to diversify their operations. So how challenging was it to get your agritourism business off the ground? How have things gone since then? Has it been a struggle, or are you glad you did it? What do you want to know about the different types of farm experiences you can visit around the state? Join in 800-642-1234. Sheila Everhart is president of the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. She stays with us. And Karen Kelly also stays here. She's a dairy farmer at the Kelly Family Farm and owner of Kelly Country Creamery in Fond du Lac. Let's go to the phones now with Jacob joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
I was calling to ask about one of the things that I've learned is that tourism often struggles during a downturn in the economy. And I was wondering if the guests could speak to what happened to agritourism and whether there's it helps support the farm during a downturn or whether it actually is also a challenge and what the creative ways to respond to a downturn in the economy is for agritourism.
Jacob, what I think is that a farm needs to be able to diversify their revenue stream. So bringing farm tours or offering events or having a value-added product to your farm rotation really helps to diversify during that time. Farming is a risky business. We're at the mercy of weather, nature, the economy, and the key, as we have collaborated across the state of Wisconsin, the key for farmers is the word diversification. The old saying, don't have all of your eggs in one basket.
Sheila, do you see that some agritourism businesses just close? That, you know, I mean, starting a restaurant is really risky, and so many restaurants close. What happens to agritourism businesses?
And what we're seeing is some of our agricultural tourism businesses who have been in business for 25, 30 years, they don't have family members that want to take over the farm. So there wasn't a succession plan or there just wasn't an interest. And unfortunately, sometimes that does happen. Or we see young farmers who want to try agricultural tourism, but they didn't do their research and homework. Karen said their family did 4 years of planning before they jumped into it. So like anything else, you have to be proactive, you have to plan ahead, and you need to really know what you're doing, and you really need to be comfortable with customer service and bringing guests to your farm. If you're a person doesn't like people, please don't bring guests to your farm. You have to be able to make sure when they're there, they have a very pleasant, positive experience. So the key is for agritourism businesses is to work in collaboration and network and plan with other agricultural organizations such as DADCAP, Department of Trade and Consumer Protection, organizations such as the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, the Wisconsin Farmers Union, MOSES, which is the Midwest Organic Sustainable and Educational Services.
Yeah, you got it there. quite the acronym. Lots of resources out there.
And, you know, Soil Sisters is a group of women that support women going into agriculture. And so there is a lot of resources out there, but the key is it's not an overnight decision. Mm. And reach out and don't be proud and say, hey, I don't know this. I need a mentor. I need help. And, you know, join Wisconsin Ag Tourism Association and learn to network and go visit family farms that are offering a similar ag tourism enterprise such as the one that an individual is thinking about doing.
Karen, do other farmers ask for advice on how to start a business? Do you see them coming to you?
I would say yes on a weekly basis. There's always somebody that's calling and asking, you know, what we're doing or that has stopped in to ask questions about it. I think that's important, you know, to get out and to ask questions and to visit places because that's really going to give you the visual and hopefully you'll be able to talk to the owner. That'll give you some better insight on how the business is run and the good and the bad that go along with it because it may look really beautiful when you walk in and everything seems to be rosy, but there's a lot of things that go beyond that, behind the scenes, that probably need more work than it does out at front.
Go ahead.
When the caller had asked about in a down economy, that is something that was affected us in when we started. That was when the recession hit, and we had to make a decision whether to move forward or not in building our business, actually building the building. And that was a big decision, like we had talked before. But I think what you find with agritourism is many things are just like a day visit type thing that makes it more affordable, that even in a down economy, that it is consumers are able to come out for the day or for a few hours and enjoy a treat or enjoy an experience. So I think that's where agritourism has an advantage of something over that you might have to go to for a whole weekend or for a week.
Jacob, does that make sense to you? Do you have anything else you want to add there?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the guest's comments. They're helpful.
So one thing I wanted to share with Jacob is he said he's in the Milwaukee area, is there's also urban farming that takes place in our urban areas, and that's another opportunity for community members to see how their food is grown or how products are produced by agricultural.
Sheila, how can farmers figure out what type of tourism operation is the best fit for them?
Well, you know, when you go into business, you have to have a passion for what you're doing. And you have to make sure that this is going to be something that is 24/7, and you got to love what you do, and you have to find your niche. And maybe your niche is going to be learning how to grow lavender, or maybe your niche is going to be a sunflower maid, or maybe you want to have a blueberry farm. But whatever you choose to do, you have to become an expert in that area, and you're going to have to love it, because once you have an investment, you're going to have to follow through and hopefully generate some income for your farm.
Well, Sean from Byron couldn't stay with us, but wanted to ask you, Karen, if you've thought about expanding the creamery or expansion of agritourism of some type.
Yes, we do think about those ideas. We've got something on the table just about every year. But you also have to remember, as you expand, you have your peak season and you have your slower season. So a gentleman told me at one time at a speaking engagement that I had, that he told me, don't ever expand your dining room or areas like that. He said, just remember this, little bar, full bar stools, big bar, empty stools. And there is some truth to that, and you really have to think twice about what you're doing, and you take a lot of information from your customers, which is very important, but you also have to sift through that and find out what's really going to work out best for you in the long run and in the off season too, not just in the peak season, because just because you expand doesn't mean that's going to bring more dollars into your business.
Karen, I have to ask, what is your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Many people ask me that, and most people get very angry, but I always like vanilla, because you have to have a good vanilla in order to have good other flavors.
Oh, that is so diplomatic, but we will.
Yes. But I do like other things throughout the seasons, you know, things like that, but there's always something with vanilla that you can always add to it to make it even better.
Well, Karen, thank you for joining us, and Sheila, thank you so much for joining us.
Can I just give one last word, Kate?
Sure can, Sheila. Yep.
For our listeners, Tuesday, August 13th, Wisconsin Ag Tourism Association is hosting an educational day at Kelly's Country Creamery in Fond du Lac. Go to our WADA website. We would love to have those people interested in agricultural tourism to join us. We also have a second one in Lancaster on November 6th. At Vesperman Farms.
And we will check those out. Sheila Everhart, president of the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association, Karen Kelly, dairy farmer and owner of Kelly Country Creamery in Fond du Lac. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.